Cheers from allthingstrek.com, folks. I'm Bob.
And I'm Warren.
Sorry. Do you have your holiday shopping out of the way yet?
No.
No, you've got a week left. What is with you people? I don't understand.
Well, first of all, we're not
I've talked to so far has not gotten theirs done.
I have an excuse. My excuse is that we're not having Christmas until January when my girlfriend's sister comes home.
Oh. That's not when Christmas happens.
Oh, hi. Yeah. Hi, Jim. So I was about to introduce that we have guest starring today, my friend Jim.
I wholeheartedly agree with, that Christmas doesn't happen in January.
Yeah, well, it does for us. So, you know, I mean.
Well, it sounds like maybe her sister's fault then.
Yeah, I mean, well, whatever.
Wait, Lainey's coming back?
Yeah, in January.
For how long is she going to be back for?
Like a week, maybe?
Yeah.
We might just have a party instead of having, like, an actual Christmas celebration, because we're all poor right now and can't really afford to get each other a lot of presents. Man, so we might just have a party instead.
Party that's is why, the best present.
That's why society invented the dollar store.
Yeah, well, I'd rather have a party than spend $5 on shitty gifts.
It's the thought that counts.
Spend that $5 on
$2.40. The thought is having a party. That
but way better
you could share the $2.40s, I suppose, or go to them in front of them saying that you're thinking about them.
It's funny that we're talking about Christmas on a Star Trek podcast when, like, there has never been Christmas portrayed in Star Trek.
Bop, bop, Star Trek Generations.
What?
Yeah, when Picard goes into the Nexus.
Okay, okay,
time.
All right,
toy,
all right,
Christmas
right.
tree, and they, Christmas they, happening right
okay,
there.
Okay, okay. But they never actually said the word Christmas.
What else?
I choose to believe that Picard Day is the replacement for Christmas.
Oh, right, on the Enterprise.
That's only on the Enterprise. The
kids, you say that.
I do say that.
The kids apparently celebrate Picard Day. I wouldn't be surprised if later ships started celebrating.
I think DS9 celebrates, but they just don't show that episode.
I think Sisko would ban that holiday because he hates Picard.
No, he forgave him after, like, you know, a day or two of hanging out with him. He's like, I killed my wife.
He didn't forgive him. He just got better at hiding it. If there's one thing I know about Sisko is that he doesn't give up grudges, like, ever. If you wrong Sisko, he will hate you forever.
You can never have a grudge against Picard.
It's true.
Well, apparently Sisko can.
Not anymore. He gave it up.
I don't think he did.
He totally did.
I just know that he was happier about the assignment, so he was being, like, less of a bitch to Picard. But you notice he never actually apologized to Picard for, like, blaming him for the things he did while he was a Borg.
You don't need to apologize to Picard for Picard killing your wife. Like, you just stop bringing it up, and that's as close as you need to get.
What I'm getting out of this is Ben Sisko has sucky Christmases. That's why I've gotten out of this so far.
No, we just haven't seen his Christmases, or his Picard days, they which are the same thing.
Alright, well, this is, I guess, a good, this would be a good segue into what we're talking about this week, which is going to be the Mirror Universe. I invited Jim because he has a serious passion for the Mirror Universe.
God, I love the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, he does. But before that, real quick, I want to give another report on the Star Trek RPG that I'm running. We had a bit of a side adventure last week because a friend of mine came to visit. He wanted to join in, and I couldn't figure out a way to fit him into the main plot. So I was like, okay. So you may remember the Star Trek episode Defector. And I'm not saying I ripped off that plot, but what I did was I ripped off that plot. and so my friend was playing a Romulan who was defecting. It was a little bit different. They had to meet him on, like, a Star Trek hive of scum and villainy and, you know, run around trying to get him back. It was a lot of fun. But it didn't really advance the main plot at all, except for the Orion Syndicate story moved up a little bit. And sadly, Bob wasn't able to be there.
I was not. I was taking care of my dad.
Mm-hmm. He had a noble excuse. But anyway, just a heads up, there will not be an episode next week, because next week is Christmas, and we're not going to be recording
next
on Christmas.
Next week is Picard Day.
Picard Day, okay.
Okay, Jim will be celebrating Picard Day. Us normal people will be doing Christmas.
I'm going to watch that episode on Christmas.
You're going to watch Pegasus in season 7?
No, I'm going to watch Picard Day.
Wait, is that Pegasus? I don't think that's Pegasus.
That is totally the opening of Pegasus. It's
really?
Picard Day. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I thought that was earlier.
It's a thing that is happening in Star Trek. It's Picard Day. Now, how often it occurs, if it's annual, biannual, I have no idea.
I'm watching the TNG episode of Picard Day.
Wait, that's not an episode.
Yeah, it is.
It's not an episode called Picard Day.
There's no episode called Picard Day.
It totally is.
Where is it, and what is it about?
It's about Picard Day.
Okay, I don't usually do this, but I'm going to look this up, like, right now.
He gets
now,
trapped in the
talking.
Turbo lift with all those kids.
That's not called Picard Day.
That's called Disaster, Season 5. That's not Picard Day.
It starts out as Picard Day.
It's Picard Day. I don't know what episode you're talking about. The three kids had, like, prize-winning science projects or whatever it was, right?
Because they loved Picard so much.
And their prize was to tour the Enterprise. Picard happened to be the tour guide for a reason. Because there was no ensign or lieutenant that could handle this for whatever reason.
It was going
to
be Picard.
It had to be Picard.
That was the prize, was to hang out with Picard so much.
That wasn't called Picard Day. Nor is that Picard Day at all. In fact, he was having a terrible time.
The actual...
First he was told he had to hang out with kids, right? And the second thing is he gets stuck stuck in Turbolith with said
Picard
kids.
Day isn't for Picard. It's for everyone but Picard. They control him with affection.
But, like, the actual Picard Day was in a different episode when we found out that the kids were had named a certain day. We never found out what day, but a certain day of the year, Picard Day.
They named
Day.
Christmas Picard Day because they were sad there was no more Christmas.
Okay. Well, they made a bunch of stuff of Picard. Yeah. Like, one was a doll.
Yeah, like an admiral called in the middle of it.
Yeah, it was
fantastic. And Picard gave that line where he's like, I'm a role model.
I'm a role model.
And it's like, oh, I'm sure Patrick Stewart loved giving that line.
Yep.
Poor Patrick Stewart. He wants to be an action hero, like, so bad. And he goes from being, like, Picard to being Xavier. He just keeps being cast in these really cerebral roles, and he just wants to be an action hero. But anyway, so Mirror Universe.
Yes.
First introduced in TOS episode Mirror Mirror, which has the best line, I think, of any Star Trek episode. Which
Where's your beard?
Yep, that's the one. It's the one where alternate Kirk is trying to figure out what's going on because he's been, you know, it's one of those transporter malfunction episodes where, like, the transporter beams them into an alternate universe and, like, switches them with the evil guys who come over.
But leaves their clothes.
Yeah, but leaves their clothes. They switch clothes, too. They, like, they switch into, like, they switch everything.
The clothes stay in the regular universe, and they switch bodies, and their bodies arrive in the other person's clothes.
Which is, you know, really a good... It's really good that they're the same size in both universes. It would be really sucky if one of them had put on a couple of pounds, mm-hmm. or, like, lost a couple of pounds. I wonder if Spock would have kept his beard or not, if alternate Spock had come over. I wonder if the beard would have stayed.
The beard probably would have stayed.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
I feel like it's part of them. Otherwise, the hair would have... They didn't have different hair.
Yeah, but I mean, the first thing you see about the alternate universe is that they have different uniforms, which are like,
so cool.
They have like a sash thing going on.
They have Spock has like a little like what's the thing? Fred from Scooby-Doo has it.
An ascot?
He has like an ascot scarf thing under his ultra sweet lapel military uniform. It's really cool looking. He's got medals everywhere. Epaulets, the whole deal. Spock gets the best uniform
in
the Mirror Universe.
Did they have epaulets on their uniforms in the Mirror Universe?
I think he did.
Well, I mean, Jim just watched this episode, like, today.
I think Spock did.
It's possible that Spock had some. I don't remember.
Some of them were wearing, like, kung fu gis, and other ones were wearing, like...
They did have some funny costumes on, like, the extras in, like, sort of the, you know, the backgrounds of some of the shots.
They were wearing kung fu gis.
It's for Kung Fu Squad that hangs out in Mirror Enterprise.
Man, Kung Fu Squad hangs out and beats up whoever they want.
And they do, it's true.
Then they declare allegiance to whoever, like, didn't like the person they wanted to beat up.
Uh-huh. Well, like, the Mirror Universe, like, you know, the reason why they did a Mirror Universe episode was that they needed or at least I suspect, was that they wanted to put the crew in, like, a weird new situation, but they didn't have the money for an alien set, and so they were like, hey, we could use the same set we already have, but it would be different, because it's an alternate universe now.
ISS Enterprise instead of USS Enterprise.
And they wouldn't have to hire any new actors. You know, it was great. It was like a win-win situation, budget-wise.
My favorite part about the warp between universes is they flip the frame of the ship over each other, so it's like heading left in regular and right in the other one, and it flips back and forth real fast.
That's only in the remastered version. They didn't do that in the original.
They totally did.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
They did.
When was the last time you watched the original, like, you know, versions of each episode?
Not so long ago, but I know they did, because it's an iconic thing that you can see in the 1996 release of Star Trek The Undiscovered Country, where they're advertising the original series. That is a thing that they have in there, where they're advertising for it.
Hmm. Maybe. For okay, one. I thought that
if
was
you really want me to cite a secondary source, that's it.
I thought that was a remastered version, but maybe not.
No.
Alright. But
the remastered stuff all has the Enterprise-looking CGI.
Yeah.
Is really kind of it for the remastered version. Everything is CGI done instead of, you know, models.
It's kind of weird when every once in a while they'll have, like, a weird cut to space that you really feel like wasn't there in the original version. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the remastered stuff.
And so you know they're in space.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's because George Lucas did it to Star Wars, so we gotta do it to Star Trek.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's copy George Lucas. Because those decisions led to some great stuff.
Man, he's super rich, so you know.
Well, we're not going to talk about George Lucas. Okay, this is the wrong podcast for that. But, you know, and then, like, so aside from the budgetary restraints, like, dramatically, the alternate universe was kind of cool because it was, like, you could see, like, you know, this is what, you know, the crew would look like if they were evil. I was a little disappointed that we never got to see any of the alternate crew doing anything, like, the alternate universe crew doing anything on the real Enterprise, but apparently they were just spotted, like, immediately.
Yeah, that was kind of goofy.
Which I guess was just because they didn't have enough time to do two stories in the same episode.
And it, like, so the way the opposite crew treated, like, Captain Kirk was, like, he just kills people, like, all the time. And that's just how he acts. So I figured, like, Mirror Kirk on the Enterprise would show up, everyone's wrong, and he's like, I'm going to murder you, and I'm going to murder you. And Spock was like, that's not an order I'm going to follow. And then he throws the Kirk hammer fist. And Spock, as we see later on in Mirror Spock beats up the entire away team by himself. So regular Spock could do that, especially with the help of whoever's in the transporter room.
Yeah, especially. Yep. Well, and like, yeah, I mean, that's one of the downsides of having a situation where you rule by fear is if you start acting really weird, no one's going to question it, even though they probably should be.
Plus, it would be really, I think, really uninteresting to watch with four of them just hang out in the brig.
Yeah.
For several
hours. Well, I mean,
I think that could be fun because they look like interesting characters. They're all yelling all the time and cursing.
Just
funny.
Four people yelling.
Well, that was the part that I thought was kind of goofy. Was they looked like when you actually see them in the background, they look like they're having seizures. They're just like yelling really violently. There doesn't seem to be any purpose to their yelling.
They're violent people.
They were mad.
But like we see them over on the other ship, and they're not like they're evil people, and they are capable of committing violence, but they're not like, you know, slathering lunatics who like run around like, you know, clawing up the bulkheads, which is kind of what they looked like.
I feel they would if things were going their way, and things were going their way when they're in the brig.
It looked like they were throwing tantrums, is what it looked like.
The Mirror Universe is well known for its tantrums. I mean, that's not
well, not until Deep Space Nine.
Apparently not. First episode, there were tantrums in the brig. You just said so.
Yeah, but I don't think that was intentional. I think they were just given some really vague direction.
Not intentional.
Intentional or not, there were.
Hey, you act like a 4-year-old, okay?
Whereas clearly Worf's tantrum in Deep Space Nine was intentional, but we'll get to that later. And I really liked Mirror Mirror, you know, both because it was interesting and then also just because Uhura played like a really important role in Mirror Mirror and actually got to do something cool and was like really, you know, really important to their plan, as opposed to usually if they bring Uhura on an away mission at all, it's so that she can be the one who doesn't know what's going on, so that they need to explain everything to her so they can explain it to the audience. And usually, sometimes Chekhov will fill that role. But, like, as in this episode, Uhura was actually important, and she was all, like, playing the seduction game with Sulu and then stabbing him with a knife.
She didn't actually stab him.
No, she was gone.
She was threatening him with a knife.
Also, we saw in that episode that Uhura is ripped, which we didn't, like...
She is totally ripped.
Yeah, she will ruin you. And we know that because the alternate universe uniforms for the ladies have the midriff deleted.
Yes, the midriff. That's like, one of my favorite parts of the Mirror Universe, is the midriff standard issue in the Terran Empire, which I feel was a strong choice on their part.
Well, because, you know, the alternate universe manages to be just a little bit more misogynistic than the regular universe.
I feel like the Mirror Universe ladies have taken this in stride because they are pretty, like, active as far as, you know, agency goes in the Mirror Universe.
Well, that's... It's kind of easy to take things in stride when the alternative is to be beaten and thrown the brig and then maybe killed.
But instead of, like, just taking it in stride and be like, I guess we're going to be a sex symbol, that's all I'm doing. They, like... murder people all day. And
well, no, I mean, what they do and the implication is that in the alternate universe, if you're a woman in Starfleet, you basically have to find a man to go fuck, and like you hope that that man is powerful enough to protect you, because that's what like the one lady we spent any time with in that episode is doing.
DePaul.
Well, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
Well, but that's, well, I mean, if we're only DePaul doing
totally
it to
did
one
Tucker
episode.
In Mirror Universe.
No, Tucker.
Who was her superior?
No, Tucker. Did her a favor, and so she didn't die by the Ponfar, had a bunch of sex with her then.
Yeah.
Later on, she seduced him over and was like, Tucker, let's have some sex, and then they didn't have sex, and she mind-melded and made him go sabotage the doodad.
Okay, well, that was... Alright, well, sorry, so now we're talking about the Enterprise episode of the Mirror Universe, which is In the Mirror Darkly, and I was gonna save this one for last, but since we're already here...
We can still save it for last.
Yeah, let's go back, let's leave it.
Okay, we'll go back to it. But... Clearly, in the TOS episode, the implication was that females in Starfleet just, you know, sleep their way around.
I'm gonna butt in on this one. Mira Uhura, from what it looked like, was not sleeping around. There's no indication that she was. There's indication Sulu wanted to do her, but never got the chance. That was a big, like, plot point, was that Sulu was pursuing and never caught her. That's why Uhura was able to use it against him. And she had the same rank, even though there was no indication of sleeping around all the time.
Well, we don't know who she was sleeping with, but I assume she was sleeping with somebody.
Sexist.
But, well, I mean, I'm just saying, given the...
For those that obviously can't see, Jim put a very accusatory finger at Orin, as he said that.
I don't remember the name of that lady who was, like, the captain's mistress.
Like Meryl or something.
But just from the way... way she was describing it, it really sounds like that was sort of the standard practice. And maybe Uhura was an exception and had managed to advance in rank without having to do it. But it seems like the Terran Empire is clearly a very unfriendly place to be a woman in TOS.
I feel like the Terran Empire is an unfriendly place to be anybody.
Yeah, but I mean, especially so.
Right, but out of the two women, one of them had the plan of sleeping around to get to the top, and the other one was legit and threatened to knife people for being a douche.
Well, I mean, so we never actually saw her do that. We saw that that was something that, that regular Uhura was doing while pretending to
but
be
it,
her.
But it wasn't out of character. No one was like, oh, Uhura, what's this with you pulling a knife? They were like, oh, shit, she pulled a knife. She's not playing. Especially when she walks off the bridge and Sulu's like, I'm going to get up and be whatever, and the guards, like, wave him down. And they're like, fuck you. She can do that.
Yeah, okay.
Threatened to knife you all day. All
right. Well, so anyway, that was so that's Mirror Mirror.
All bets are off when the Agony Booth is a thing that exists on the ship.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the alternate universe is a little bit silly. The whole idea of managing a ship by like killing whoever's above you in rank, there's no way that that could possibly work. Like you could never like I mean you could make the argument that Klingons do it, but like the Klingon system is clearly like it based on a series of prerequisites where like you're not allowed to just challenge the captain at any time. You have to like you clearly have to have the support of the crew in order to do
I
that.
I would argue they have similar prerequisites.
I would say so too.
TOS.
No.
Yeah, they totally do. Like no. If someone murdered the captain, they need to back up with other people behind them.
All they need to do is do it when no one can see it. Like that's like clearly what happened.
Obviously,
like, Chekhov just like rolled up and was like, "I'm gonna kill you," and no one's around to see it.
Yeah, but you had backup. Chekhov had backup.
People
well, that was only to like physically subdue Kirk. He had two guys.
Yeah, but if Chekhov had shown up later, there like every other time there's been repercussions or there's been support from other crew members and like logistics or like I got orders from Starfleet that they would presumably be able to convince someone in Starfleet to back them up on later on. There is a chain of command.
Well, but, like, Chekhov isn't killing Kirk to become captain. If you listen to what Chekhov says, when he kills Kirk, Spock will become the captain, and everyone else will move up in rank.
Right.
And so, like, that's literally the only reason he's doing it. He doesn't actually even want Kirk's job yet.
Well,
he just wants to go up in rank, and he's just cornering Kirk in, like, a back alley and knifing him.
That's Chekhov's plan, though. I mean, that's sort of portrayed as the norm of that's how things can work. But Chekhov isn't making an end run to power. He's creating a power vacuum so everyone floats up. And that's not something that he's going to take responsibility for personally, presumably.
Well, but if you look at like the way Sulu and Spock are talking, it's pretty clear that everyone is constantly planning and scheming against everyone else. Whereas in the Klingon ships, the only time you get one of those like challenges to move up in the ranks, that only happens when the captain seriously fucks up, or when someone of a higher rank makes a big mistake.
In this case, I feel like in Mirror Universe.
I think you said the word fuck in like 7 minutes.
Yeah, I have.
Twice.
Orange feels strongly about Mirror Universe.
I'm just saying that Mirror Universe was really goofy, but that's partially just because TOS in general was really goofy. And we'll see more of this in the Mirror Darkly, which is like, you know, kind of a modernized version and also kind of not. But anyway,
that episode rules.
I think we spent like 15 minutes just talking about Mirror Mirror. So I want to talk about some of the Deep Space Nine, because it wasn't until Deep Space Nine that we saw the Mirror Universe again,
and some of the repercussions of what happened in Mirror Mirror,
which are dumb and I hate.
Really, you think so?
It's really
well, okay. So just to recap, in Deep Space Nine, the first episode we have was Crossover, where actually not through a transporter but through the wormhole, Bashir and Kira made it to the alternate universe and found alternate Tarok Nor, Deep Space Nine, and like found out that at the end of Mirror Mirror, Kirk, like real Kirk, had convinced alternate Spock to not be a huge dick and like to go around and try to reform the Empire.
Other way around, Spock convinced Kirk.
No.
Real Kirk convinced Spock.
Yeah.
Real Kirk convinced Spock. You're making it sound like it was Kirk that came back.
No, that's not what I said. What I said was that Real Kirk convinced alternate Spock to go around and... I'm sorry if I misspoke. But Real Kirk convinced alternate Spock to, you know, basically be nice, as it were, and to, like, try to reform the Empire and stop it being this giant, like, all-conquering dominion. And, you know, and in particular, to not wipe out the planet that they were hanging out over.
The Holkins, least probable society ever.
Yeah, and so then we find out that...
what was the prime directive in that for real Starfleet and such?
Well, I mean,
by the way, they didn't look like more people species to me.
Well, but then, like, but so then in
Deep Space, they're trucking around in togas.
No, what's this one? Why does togas indicate you that you're not that you don't have warp drive? I mean, lots of people wear togas.
Well, they're not using their dilithium crystals, so I feel like that's an indication that they're not warp capable.
Anyway,
but anyway, in Crossover, we find out that Spock, alternate Spock, did indeed reform the Empire and make it into at least something a little more resembling the Federation.
Which is dumb.
But then apparently they were conquered by the Cardassian Klingon Alliance. All right, so now, Jim, you just say why you think it's dumb.
Okay, it's dumb for a couple reasons. One of the reasons is, like, so Spock, alternate Spock, Beard Spock, is trying to reform the Empire. And part of the explanation of how he can rise to power is regular Kirk knows about the person-deleter machine that alternate Kirk found. And he's like, Spock, you got this person-deleting machine. You can use this person-deleting machine to make the Empire a better place. So through fear and murder, you can change the Empire of fear and murder into happiness and sunshine. Which, like, if Spock was trying to reform things, you'd think using fear and murder to do it would be a stupid way to do it. Secondly, the entire Empire is full of scheming, murdering assholes. How could Spock survive long enough in that sort of environment to reform the Empire in the first place? And third of all, they reform the Empire, because as the Federation shows us, you can have a conscious, ethical society and still maintain a military force. Starfleet, as much as they say they're not the military, is totally the military.
Oh, totally.
And yeah, they use it as a deterrent force, and they're like, we will blow you up with phasers if you're being a dick. But apparently in Mirror Universe, through their change from being an empire based on fear and whatever, they demilitarized or something. Somehow their power level dropped so everyone else could jump them, which wasn't possible before. I'm not understanding where suddenly gaining ethics means the Empire has to collapse.
Well, personally,
I think it was because there was such a radical change in the policies that the Empire had put forth that alternate universe that Spock had changed, mm-hmm. where everyone else is like, well, no, this is totally, we're going to take advantage of this then, is what we're going to do, and gain our independence, because they totally probably had a bunch of vassals everywhere.
Yeah.
Or had a whole bunch of conquered planets. So, I mean,
there is sort of a history of, like, if you take a place that's being totally oppressed, and then you give them, like, a little bit less oppression, but they're still being really oppressed, at that point, rather than saying, thank you for giving us a little bit less, thank you for giving us a little bit less oppression, they will say, hey, wait a minute, they gave us a little less, let's take away the rest, and then they'll rebel against you.
Yeah.
So that's possible. As for your first two points, I feel they kind of answer each other. Because, like, the reason why Spock is able to survive long enough to make his reforms is because he has the person deleter. And eventually people would stop messing with him because he has the person deleter.
Yeah, where is that tech? I want more of that.
Delete people.
Lost the thing.
I assume that Spock either destroyed it when the Empire was falling or it was just, you know. I'm not entirely clear on if Spock was still supposed to be alive when the Empire fell.
I want
to
know where it is in the regular universe, the person deleter.
I don't think it exists in the regular universe.
It's probably just
I
a modified transporter.
Something they made up. I was kind of disappointed.
It's really just an instant transporter.
Why don't they use transporters as, like, tactical nukes and, like, when you're fighting on DS9 and people, like, warp in and they're like, oh, I transported in. Why don't you just have someone at, like, the transporter bay transporting people off and then just never unloading their buffer anywhere?
Well, you could argue the same question. Why don't you just transport a bomb over instead of transporting over a boarding party?
Voyager did that.
Yeah. Because maybe you want the ship.
Yeah, but sometimes, but a lot of times you don't. Yeah. I mean, or for that matter,
there are very few boarding actions we actually see through Star Trek.
Why don't you transfer?
I think the only one I actually remember seeing. One, there were a ton in Voyager, actually, so I take that back. But I mean, right. Voyager is, like, all about the ship going through, just, like, pirate space all the time.
And also, there's a very good demotivational poster out there, which is just because it happened on Voyager doesn't mean it's real.
Yeah. And then DS9, we see the Klingons try to take the station.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a violent boarding action. The other actions we see aren't really all that violent.
I'm going to go ahead and make the assumption that if you're operating a transporter, and this comes from two sources, if you're operating a transporter and your target is, like, moving around a lot, it's going to be hard to get a transporter lock, especially if they're not wearing, like, a friendly signal beacon of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
There is some precedent for that. Ironically enough, in the new movie, when Spock's mom falls, suddenly he loses the transporter lock. And also, I once played a Game Boy game that was Star Trek, that was all Star Trek-y, And one of the missions was you had to beam over all the dudes from this freighter. But instead of standing still and waiting to be beamed out, the crew was just running around, like, flailing their arms. And I had to follow them with the transporter, like, target or being like, no, no, get in the transporter beam.
Oh, man, you're playing Ghostbuster with a transporter. That's rad.
So that's my assumption, is that if there's, like, a fight going on, especially with energy weapons and, like, a bunch of people all mixing it up and getting really close together, I could buy that it would be difficult to lock on to a specific target. And especially, you know, especially since you want to be absolutely sure in that instance that you aren't beaming out your own people.
Well, on the other hand, like, maybe a partial transporter lock would just transport out their lungs and heart instead of all of them.
Yeah, but what if you did that to your friend?
Transporter.
I mean, they knew the shit they were getting into.
They knew the risks. I mean,
that was one of the waivers you signed. You got on this ship, buddy.
I feel like another question is, like, why don't they have transport scramblers set up as backups for when the shields fall? I mean, but I...
Yeah, that would be a good one.
That would be another thing.
Where were we with our
DS9? We were talking about the Empire falling, and I was going to say that the other thing is that I don't entirely believe that the reforms of the Empire were responsible for its collapse, because the person telling us this story is Kira, alternate Kira. And she has a very she and everyone else in positions of power in the alliance clearly have a vested interest in making it look like if you are a nice government you will fall. And I would not be surprised at all if the Empire just couldn't handle the combined forces of the Cardassians and the Klingons, especially since again the Empire was so poorly run with its whole like backstabbing with its whole backstabbing command structure and. So I would not
Well, all this is taking place in a very short amount of time anyway. We're only talking about, what, 80, 90 years?
Longer than that, I think. I think about a century.
I think 100 years is...
Yeah, about 100 years.
Because we're talking from 2267 to 2370?
Yeah, I mean... Right? Personally, I wouldn't be surprised...
So yeah, about 100 years. Right? That's a pretty short amount of time for an empire to go through radical changes like that.
Yeah.
And then also to fall with all of the conflict that was arisen from, like, the Cardassians and the Klingons and such.
Especially with Spock, like, if Spock preaching togetherness and hugs, like, if a lot of people bought into the hug theory, that could split the Empire from the inside anyway.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was a civil war, but I mean, if you look at the way Spock talks about it in A Mirror, Mirror, he describes how... Like, Kirk's like, you have to make change, and he's like, well, sure, change is great, but you have to have the power to enforce your change. He's clearly a very pragmatic fellow. Mm-hmm. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would say, let's put flowers in our guns and trust that the enemy won't attack us. He just doesn't strike me as...
That seems to be what happened, though, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's the way Kira kind of describes it, but I honestly think that it's more likely that the Cardassians and the Klingons would have overrun the Empire anyway. Especially since, I mean, again, both of those powers are, the Klingons are extremely powerful, the Cardassians moderately less so, but I think together they could totally take the Empire.
So my other complaint with the Terran Empire falling, and this is an aesthetic complaint as opposed to a logical one, is I personally really love the Terran Empire, because a lot of times in Star Trek I get upset with the inefficiency and the hug theories, and just the Federation itself is... not super interesting a lot of the times. It's not gritty or dark, and I like gritty or dark stories. Not necessarily because I think they're better, but because it's more fun for me to be sort of involved in those character dynamics. And all the episodes that have the Terran Empire, I get to watch Star Trek, but through, like, a grim, dark filter. And that's really fun for me, and DS9 doesn't have the same thing.
No, it doesn't. Okay, so, all right, we spent like 15 minutes on that, just that particular point. I feel like this is going to be a two-parter, but, okay, so in Mirror Mirror, in Crossover, now we're dealing with the Klingon, Cardassian Alliance, and Terrans are all super oppressed, you know, and it was basically done for the same reason that Mirror Mirror was done, which was that it was a bottle show, which is what you do when you never leave the existing sets.
Because
they could literally just dress up the Deep Space Nine sets to look like, you know, the evil universe, and, like, all the actors got to play their characters, but a little different. And the only one that was kind of lame was Garak, and... God, what was his name? The name of the actor?
Andrew Robinson?
Yeah, Andrew Robinson apparently has talked about how he really didn't like playing alternate Garak, because he was just like regular Garak, except dumber, and he didn't have a conscience, so he was just boring. And it was like, I mean, that literally seemed to be the reason that Kira chose him as her second in command. Because we find out that he's always trying to kill her, but he's just really inept at it.
He's just really bad at everything.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything good.
Later on in the Ferengi episode.
Oh, right. They outwit him cleverly.
They outwit him by, like, you should torture us because maybe we have secrets. And he's like, oh, shit, you said secrets. You should tell me secrets. And he's like, what? Like, he's never heard of secrets before or doesn't understand interrogating. He's like, I'm going to kill you with super virus.
Well, this is, I think, all part of the whole just mirror universe trope where... Normal universe, or prime, I'm going to say prime universe. Prime universe Garrick is a smart person who has a conscience and is very secretive about what he does, right? Whereas mirror universe Garrick is dumb and very blatant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the opposite of what he is.
Well,
but
that scene in particular where he's just so incompetent, it's surprising that he's ever been allowed to hold a gun near anybody, or a phaser, disruptor, whatever. But I have a theory that the Ferengi episode of the Mirror Universe is one big joke on everybody who talks about Mirror Universe or thinks about Mirror Universe, because the entire time they're making
like
fun.
Us.
Exactly. Because every time we spend talking or thinking about the applications of alternate reality or Mirror Universe, Rom in that episode is constantly jabbering about alternate reality. He's like, alternate Brunt is nice because regular Brunt's me. Alternate Brunt gave me these worms, but these worms are good in regular universe, so in alternate universe they must be poison. But if they're poison, then nice Brunt wouldn't give them to me and he'd be mean, but he can't be mean because regular Brunt's mean. And
we're talking about the Emperor's New Clothes now, by the way.
Sorry. Rom talks in circles, which is essentially like when you try to make sense of the mirror universe, you end up talking in circles. And there's another joke in there is Vic Fontaine showing up.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make any sense. He was a hologram. There's absolutely no reason for him to show up as a person. He shows up and immediately dies, bringing up nothing but questions, which I am convinced are the writers flipping off everyone who wants to make sense of the mirror universe.
See, I think you might be right to an extent. I still hate that episode.
I just really enjoyed seeing James Darren holding up two phaser pistols.
Well,
like, what's up, bitches?
See, here's the thing, is that in Crossover, the mirror universe as it was presented to us was a fairly believable place, and the only super over-the-top crazy thing about it was Mirror Kira and her, like, you know, libido the size of a dwarf star. And like that was the only thing that was like, you know, just that was the only thing that was like really weird and out of place.
Which is funny because Kira's libido is pretty large anyways.
Yeah, I mean, so that was the thing, is that in Crossover, I feel like they weren't playing like mirror opposites of each other. They were, if anything, maybe playing more extreme versions of themselves. Like if you look at Odo in who's like the mine overseer. And you can see, like, I can totally foresee a set of circumstances under which real Odo could have arrived at that attitude, where he has absolute contempt for anyone below him, and, you know, he maintains his order, but instead of being justice-oriented, he literally just beats anyone who moves out of line.
He works in a slap factory.
Yeah, exactly.
Watching Odo slap O'Brien? Or was it Sisko?
Yeah.
He was slapping somebody.
It was Bashir.
It was
because,
Bashir.
Because Odo was dead by the time... Alternate Odo was dead by the time Sisko shows up.
Yeah, he exploded in jello goo.
I think Bashir shoots him.
Mm.
Which is totally not what it ends up looking like later when changelings get shot by energy weapons.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Continuity error!
You know what it kind of looks like? It's like a balloon bursting, actually, like when Sisko, or when Odo gets, alternate Odo gets zapped.
Maybe alternate changelings work different.
Well, alternate Odo...
I am willing to accept that possibility.
It's also funny, because alternate Odo, like, when he sees Bashir pointing a gun at him, he goes for his gun, but it actually would have been faster for him to just, like, tentacle arm across the room.
Or he could have, like, tentacled and, like, made a hole where the laser was gonna go and then not been shot.
Well, I'll accept that he didn't do that because the whole idea that lasers travel slow enough for us to see them is a conceit of television. That's not actually supposed to be part of the universe. But really, he should have just tentacle-armed, but he didn't. Which maybe just is a show that that alternate Odo doesn't get a chance to practice his shape-shifting very often because, like, everyone...
He's too busy keeping the miners
in line. Slapping
people. Yeah, well, because everyone in the mirror universe is, like, super xenophobic, so, like, it's possible that they all, like, you know, he gets more crap for being a shape-shifter than he does in real universe.
That's because, as we see... Well, the reason they're probably very xenophobic is because... And this is kind of brought around in Enterprise is because a lot of the early spacefaring history that we see, especially from Earth's perspective in the alternate universe is very much like, hey, we got ships. Let's put a big gun on this ship and go subjugate the first alien people we see.
So we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. That's going to be fascinating.
She's got a big shitty grin on his face.
Yeah. But, okay, so after Crossover, they decided to have another Mirror Universe episode, and it was Through the Looking Glass. And that's the one where Smiley O'Brien, because that's what he's
Smiley.
He's called Smiley on the other side.
It's because he's sad and it's funny.
Yep. but he shows up pretending to be real O'Brien, and then he kidnaps Sisko and takes him over because alternate Sisko was the head of the rebellion, and then he died, and so they need real Sisko to finish his mission, which was to go get his wife. Which I find a little convenient that. Like, I think that was stretching it a little, that, like, it's already stretching it a little bit to assume that everyone who exists in the regular universe would also exist in the alternate universe, but the fact that he was also married to the same woman in
the
both universes...
The two worms should be poisoned!
Yeah, that was a little weird, was that he was also married to the same woman, but, like, still, it was an okay episode, although there is a scene that really bothers me, and it didn't bother me so much when I first saw it, but when I thought about it, and that's the scene where and Jim finds it funny that I'm bothered by the scene so much. That's the scene where Sisko sleeps with alternate Dax, because alternate Dax is like alternate Sisko's mistress, and that's basically rape. And most like laws recognize it as rape because he's pretending to be someone else to have sex.
You know who doesn't recognize it as rape?
Who?
Merlin.
Wait, what?
Merlin doesn't recognize that.
Are we talking about it from like the classic Arthurian like stories, or from the television show Merlin?
You know, the Arthurian stories.
Well, Merlin's a huge douche in those stories anyway.
Yeah, but that he still doesn't recognize it.
Yeah, well, he's not really a good moral.
I'm just offering a counterpoint of a source that doesn't recognize that it's right.
And I thought it was funny that in TOS, in Mirror Mirror, they had a similar situation where alternate Kirk's mistress was, like, throwing herself all over regular Kirk, and regular Kirk didn't sleep with her, even though he was kind of going to, but, like, through circumstances,
he was totally going to. He got a phone call, though, and he couldn't.
Which I think it was funny that TOS, which was, like, really misogynistic, even for the 60s, managed to avoid that particular mistake. And then DS9, which was this really forward-thinking show from the 90s, stumbled right into it and didn't really think about it too much. It was like, yep, just pretend, just don't think about it, just ride right on past.
It's cool, bro.
But still, overall, that episode's pretty good. And, you know, we got to, you know, Sisko got to resolve some of his wife issues, and, you know, I was fine with that. And it doesn't start getting super weird until the Shattered Mirror, which is the episode where they send Jennifer back through to Universe Prime to effectively kidnap Jake.
And that's one where Jake can't tell the difference between fake mom and dead mom.
Yeah, and like Jake is just like, you know, I mean, I don't hate Jake as a character.
I do.
I know Jim does. But in that episode, like, Jake is acting like such a dumbass. And, like, okay, and I can get that if your dead mom shows up out of the blue, even if she's not technically your mom, that could impair your judgment a little. Okay, I mean, I can just imagine if my mom had died when I was a little kid, and then suddenly a woman who looked and talked exactly like my mom and said she was my mom, but, like, not really, kind of showed up, I could maybe, you know, be convinced to trust her when I shouldn't. But when he's, like, talking to alternate Nog, he doesn't get that alternate Nog doesn't want to be his friend. He's just, like, it's like he doesn't understand that he's in an alternate universe, and I have to wonder if he's been drugged.
I feel like Jake doesn't treat the alternate universe people like real people. He treats them sort of like toys and an interesting, like, gimmick, because alternate Nog comes up and he's like, get the fuck out of, like, this place. And Jake's like, oh, that's adorable. You don't want me here. Back where I come from, in my world, you're my friend. Like, I don't give a fuck. He's like, no, you're my friend. Look at you. You're not my friend. You're so cute. And then his mom is like, I'm your alternate mom. And he's like, oh, you do look just like alternate mom. This is nice. I'm going to hang out with you for a little bit because you're like a toy.
He's like treating it like a holodeck program.
He pretty much is.
That's an interesting take on that. I still wouldn't be surprised if she slipped him some pills to make it more, like, more pliable.
Which, you know, falls in line with Jake's long history of escapism.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe Jake just has serious trouble dealing with reality.
Well, I mean, his mom died from Borg when he was tiny, so maybe.
Yeah. Well, in the same room with him, incidentally.
And his dad's crazy.
His dad is a little crazy. But that episode bothers me.
I'm gonna design a ship to fight the Borg, guys.
That ship bothers me for other reasons, and the Defiant is the big one. So first of all, in Shattered Mirror, we find out that the Resistance has taken over Deep Space Nine or Tarok Nor, and the first question you have to ask is why? Why on earth would they take over Tarok Nor? Because in the alternate universe, Tarok Nor is a Cardassian-built, Bajoran-owned space station. The Bajorans hate the Terrans because the Terrans are the ones who were occupying them in that timeline.
Mm-hmm.
What strategic value does Tarok Nor pose to the human Resistance?
Now, I forget, is this before or after DS9's upgrades?
Before, I think.
Okay, because after the upgrades, Tarok Nor would be a great strong point because that thing beat up like an entire Klingon battlefield.
Well, you're talking about Prime Universe.
Right, but they mirror each other pretty closely, so it might... If it happened after DS9's upgrade,
I don't. Because alternate universe DS9 is still in orbit of Bajor. It's not nowhere near the wormhole right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just a mining platform, is all it is.
But as far as technologies go and a lot of events, a lot of things mirror themselves close enough that I would be willing to believe if this episode was after DS9's upgrade, Tarok Nor had similar capabilities.
I could buy that the Resistance would have maybe fortified the station a bit, and it would be pretty scary for Bajor to have.
I'll tell you straight up,
it doesn't,
because as we see later in this episode, a fleet of five entire Alliance ships in a series is going to totally wipe out Tarok Nor. You know, it was really clear that they were using the Deep Space Nine set because it was a budget issue, and it was the first time that the Mirror Universe, like, budget issues had really limited the story of the episode. And it was like, they really shouldn't be here. There's no reason for them to want to own this station. You think they would want to own something closer to a Terran population center, like, say, Earth comes to mind, or any big Terran colony. But there aren't any Terrans living on Bajor. Like, how are they going to recruit new members from Tarok Nor? Because that's what you have to do when you're trying to make a popular resistance, is you have to recruit new members. But, alright, so that aside...
I don't know. I think that would be kind of like saying, like, the French resistance in, like, Algeria didn't make any sort of, like, difference at all, like, in any sort of inspirational way to the entire French resistance during World War II.
Well, I can't comment exactly onto the French resistance in Algeria, but the difference is that the French resistance in Algeria wasn't just French people. In fact, it was almost entirely non-French people, because the Nazis were occupying Algeria, not just the French people in Algeria. So, like, all the native Algerians, they were also resisting the Nazis, and they were kind of grouped under the French resistance.
The point, though, is that it was something that happened that was for, making French life better. Under Nazi rule, right? Or to get rid of Nazi rule.
The idea here is, as far as I could tell from the Mirror episodes, was the Resistance started on Tarok Nor. And I never saw any indication that there was a Terran Resistance going on anywhere else but Tarok Nor. Like, it looked like Tarok Nor was the Resistance. There was Bashir, Smiley, Dead Sisko, and his wife.
Well, if you look at
it,
they were hiding in the Badlands. Like, before they take the station, the Resistance is hiding in the Badlands, and that's clearly a good place to hide a Resistance cell, because it's hard to find anything in the Badlands, because it's all plasma.
The Maquis.
Yeah, that's where the Maquis hide. So that makes sense. But again, like, because, like, and with the Algeria reference, Algeria was French territory, so it was, like, important to the French national identity that they were able to hold on to a piece of their territory and resist it from controlling the Nazis. But, like, from being controlled by the Nazis, excuse me. But Tarok Nor is not part of Terran territory. It was never part of Terran territory. It was built after the occupation. And capturing it is just a huge waste of resources that, again, at best is a symbolic victory, when they could have achieved something just as powerfully symbolic by capturing something closer to one of their population centers, where they could have recruited new members.
Should just phone away on the Defiant.
Okay, so then there's the Defiant, and they apparently started building the Defiant. Where did they build the Defiant?
The Defiant's Badlands.
Not like a model
they
ship.
They had a secret base.
What are they, Shinzon?
Yeah, the same place as
Shinzon. They just built it somewhere.
So, okay, we have this planet, right? It's right next to Romulus, the capital of the Romulan Empire. We're gonna build this super ship.
But the Defiant is docked, like, right next... It, like, is docked at Tarok Nor, but their problem is that they can't get its engines to work properly. So, like, how did they get it there? So the implication is that they built it at Tarok Nor, and it's like,
maybe
okay...
Maybe they had it towed to Tarok Nor.
With what? What did they tow it with? They've got like little shuttlecraft. They have like little raiders.
The Defiant's really small. There's no like friction in space, so you could totally
do
it.
No, but there's still mass in space.
You can move it a little bit. Maybe they pushed it. You just nosed it a little bit.
As Bridge Commander has told us, Peregrines are pretty rad.
Oh, well, let's not talk about that. But okay. Peregrines, but the implication is kind of that they actually built it at Terraknor, which is even more absurd. So, like, you know, where did they build it? Where did they get the weapons for it? So, like, there's that whole issue. And then they capture Sisko to help them fix it instead of O'Brien. And they talk about it, well, because they, up until that point, Sisko's role on the Defiant was pretty clearly an advisory position. He helped design it, and the reason he was there was because he was a combat officer with experience fighting the Borg. Now, suddenly, in this episode, because that's originally what it was for, right? Was to fight the Borg. But then suddenly, in this episode, they're talking about Sisko like he designed it himself.
There's an episode that mentions that Sisko has, like, as a hobby, designs ships. Like, that's a thing he does. Like, that is a skill set he has that rarely comes up.
I don't think that that's actually, like, that's something I think that they decided later. Because there's the episode where he builds, like, a wooden spaceship, but, like, he builds it from, like, blueprints. He doesn't design that ship.
Right, but there's definitely an episode where they talk about, like, it's a thing that he designs starships. Like, that's what he did when he was hanging out at the ship base.
Well, no, he was the administrator.
But that was his hobby, was designing starship schematics.
Well, right, because, like, a hobbyist can totally design ships. I mean, it's like, I feel like, sometimes the writers don't really understand.
A ventriloquist built a helicopter.
Yeah, but not a very good one.
What
are you talking about? I don't know what particular instance you're talking about.
Just because someone's given vocation is something, like Sisko's as a command officer, for instance, doesn't mean he's no good at designing a starship.
Well, actually, that's exactly what it means. Designing starships is, like, really difficult and requires lots of schooling and training and a lot of techniques. But, like, if anyone could do it, they wouldn't be go to engineering school if you could just decide you were going to be a ship designer.
Well, the thing is, you know, there's a lot of hobbyists, and you can be really good at something as a hobby. You know, ship design isn't really any different. It doesn't make you a professional, but the thing is, Sisko does this as a hobby, so he's a strong working background.
You're thinking of the difference between a game designer and, like, a game programmer. A game designer designs a game and all the systems, for instance. The programmer is actually the guy who's making it and programming it up then to work. I can go design a game myself right now, design a one-up and go like, oh yeah, it's going to do all this stuff, it's going to be awesome. The programmer is the one that's got to implement it. So Sisko
Are you talking about the difference between a concept guy and an implementation guy? Because I can be a concept guy. I could say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a tiny ship with lots of guns on it?
Sisko was there when it was built. He has some background. He's not a professional, but he has some background in the designs and how they fix the problems that their current Defiant is having. O'Brien may be a better engineer, but he wasn't there while they were building it.
No, but O'Brien is the one who fixed the original Defiant when it was having this exact same problem. Like, a problem that Sisko couldn't fix, O'Brien fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just doesn't make any sense, and they clearly only grabbed Sisko because they didn't want to have O'Brien talking to O'Brien. Because, like, of all the alternate characters, Smiley is the most like his like regular counterpart.
I want to see O'Brien talking to O'Brien.
Yeah, so do I. And I think it was clearly that they felt they needed to have Sisko playing a more important role in the episode. And I think it's just silly. I think it's really silly that Sisko, in addition to being a dedicated command officer, he also has this entire ship design skill set that he never uses. Because, like, you know, and this is not just conceptual stuff, because they're asking him to fix a really nitty-gritty problem with the ship that they apparently can't, even though they have all their own technical experts.
So none of them have the practical experience that, like, O'Brien has, for instance. That's why he was able to fix it, because of his years of engineering background.
Well, exactly. Which is, you know, just I think it just reinforces my point that they really should have just grabbed O'Brien. Would have made way more sense than trying to grab Sisko.
Should have grabbed both.
And so then finally we actually get the Defiant off the ground, as it were. And the Defiant goes out and they meets the mighty Alliance fleet, which consists of 5 entire spaceships.
I feel like that fleet is so small because Terraknor, if we're going off the theory that Terraknor sucks, which I think is probably legit, why would they need more than that for this tiny resistance that doesn't have any ships? It's got this stupid space base. Why do we need more than this giant ship and 4 smaller ones?
Right, but Well, I mean, like, well, first of all, it was like, this was like the Chancellor. This was like Chancellor Worf. Like his he himself was commanding this battle. I would figure that he would bring a bit like a bigger fleet. Hold on here. Okay.
There we go.
I was worried maybe it had stopped recording, but it didn't. Okay. So I feel like he would have brought a bigger fleet just for his own personal safety. But that, I suppose that's a possibility. But even that, even with a small fleet, the Defiant then proceeds to, like, easily defeat a ship, like, 10 times its size. And it's like, okay, I get that the Defiant is overgunned. I get it. But the Defiant, like, it still has to obey physical restrictions. The Defiant cannot possibly have more powerful weapons than a Necfar. Like, you just can't. Unless the assumption here is that alternate universe equipment is so lame that regular universe stuff can just destroy it. Which maybe that's the implication. I don't know. But
which wouldn't make any sense because alternate universe is far more warlike, so it would make sense that they would have better equipment anyways.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I mean, you see the Defiant...
Well, I don't think necessarily they would.
I mean, if you run off the theory that since regular universe Prime doesn't spend all its money on war so it can tech faster, maybe... But, like...
I mean, historically speaking, necessity is the mother of invention, and usually cultures that spend a lot of time going to war have better war equipment than the ones that don't.
Or just the fact that the ones with better war equipment survive longer than the ones that don't.
I would totally buy that, you know, arms races were a constant thing in the alternate universe. Mm-hmm. Totally. Like, they are in the Prime universe as well, right? But because of the constant conflict we've seen... And then the sudden lack of conflict that we have, which is more restricted to things like trying to defeat the, you know, Terran resistance in the alternate universe, I could see why weapons tech would stagnate and why things appear so lame in the alternate universe. Whereas in Prime universe, we very much have a lot of very large, significant powers still going at it in both Hot Wars and Cold Wars all over the place.
Wait, so in having more conflict or trying to put down a resistance that puts a stagnation on the arms?
Well, I mean, we know that in the alternate universe, it's not just, like, the Cardassians and the Klingons don't rule everything. We know that the other powers still exist. The Romulans are still a thing. There are other space powers out there.
Vulcans are presumably somewhere.
I mean, like, it's unclear. The Vulcans may have been conquered as part of the Terran Empire. We don't know.
Probably.
But I just, like, I think that I think we can... The implication is usually that the technology is roughly equivalent, except for that the alternate universe is missing a few things, like cloaking devices, replicators.
No, they're not.
Well, they'll get those later. Don't worry about it.
Oh, no, they're stealing a cloaking device by hiring a couple of Ferengi because they kidnapped their Grand Negus.
And then we go back in time.
We're going to get to that. But the point is that I really don't like how the Defiant... Because I really don't like episodes where they make the Defiant look like it is a ship that is basically magic. That it's like somehow the Federation designed this ship that despite being very small... is more powerful than not only any other ship of its size, but just any other ship, period. And they did the same thing in Defiant, which was just in the regular universe, when they had, like, the Defiant, like, was, like, Riker was seriously considering fighting 9 Cardassian warships with the Defiant. Like, that was something...
Well, yeah, and Kira told him that was a really bad idea.
Well, like, but, like, well, what Kira said was that, okay, so even the Defiant can't beat, like, 9 Cardassian warships. Like, or no, it was 12, because there were 9 chasing them, and there were 3 coming at them. And so, that was the Defiant's limit. Like, and it was like, wait, seriously? I mean, I think the Defiant would have a hard time defeating 2 Cardassian warships, because the Cardassian warships are significantly larger and more powerful than the Defiant.
Have we ever seen, like, an episode where a Cardassian warship does anything cool, though? Because the Cardassians are just constantly getting their shit kicked. I mean...
Well, I mean, the only time we ever actually see the Cardassian ships engaged in pitched battle, is when they are fighting in the Dominion War, and, you know, they're given about as good as they get. When they switch sides in the last episode of Deep Space Nine, spoilers, they switch sides in the last episode of Deep Space Nine.
Have you seen all of Deep Space Nine yet?
No, he hasn't. He's halfway through.
By the way.
Spoilers. So they switch sides at the end of the last episode of Deep Space Nine, and, you know, they blow up a bunch of Dominion ships. Granted, in Deep Space Nine space battle, ships are pretty fragile. And we do know that the Klingons totally rolled the Cardassians in their invasion, but I got the impression that was due more to superior numbers and a poor organization on the Cardassian military's part, because they had just gone through a revolution in which the military government had been overthrown, Yep. I'm guessing a significant number of their officer corps.
And also, they lost their entire fleet of 20 ships on the ill-fated.
No, it was only 10 ships, remember?
Oh, right, because the combined force of 20 ships.
Like, there was also.
Are you talking about the Obsidian Order and the Tal Shiar going?
Yeah,
well, that was a
giant fleet.
That was the Obsidian Order getting that together.
No, yeah, those are extra. Fleet. Those are extra credit ships. The Obsidian Order's not supposed to have any ships. But the Cardassians had lost, like, a lot of their officer corps due to this uprising because a lot of the officers were probably brought up on charges for being, like, you know, horrible people to the civilians. And then they had also lost the Obsidian Order, and I got the impression that the Cardassians relied very heavily on superior intelligence that they get from the Order, mm-hmm. and then suddenly they didn't have that. And so I got the impression that that's why they were rolled so hard, as opposed to... Like, as opposed to Cardassian ships just being
lame. I find it amusing that the civilian government is like, you guys suck for being dicks all the time. And they're like, oh no, our giant dicks are gone, and now we're getting crushed by people who are still dicks.
Shit.
Which is similar to the parallel of the Terran Empire, being like, we shouldn't be dicks anymore. Oh no, we're being crushed by everyone who's still being a dick.
Yeah, I did think it was sad that they spent all this time building up the Cardassian dissident movement, and then, like, they had it take over, like, off-screen, and then immediately get conquered by Klingons. I was like, oh, that's kind of sad.
Star Trek's trying to tell us something.
Star Trek is trying to tell me that we shouldn't overthrow oppressive regimes, because we'll get invaded by somebody else.
Wow, take that 90%.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. I know. Feel that's very significant. What it was just said on this podcast.
Yeah, all right.
Wow.
Okay, so, all right. So,
I need to make that a demotivational poster.
All right, so we've argued enough. I feel we've argued enough about the Defiant. I think it's time to move on from Shattered Mirror to Resurrection.
Now, I don't recall this episode at all.
It's really easy to forget.
Vedic Belial.
Barail. But he's not Vedic, he's just regular.
Regular is Thief Barail.
Thief Barail.
Thief Barail shows up.
From the alternate universe.
Bangs Kira, looks at the orb.
Does he actually have sex with Kira?
He totally bangs Kira.
Do they? Okay, I'd forgotten if they actually slept together.
Yeah, he's just like, what's up? I'm so tortured. And Kira's like, damn, that's hot.
That sounds like Kira to me.
Yeah.
Especially when seeing Barail.
Well, I think it's really funny because they have this whole, like, Dax and Kira often have, like, these little, like, you know, little spats where they, like, give each other shit for their romantic habits. And they're always talking about how Dax is always having these weird flings and how Kira is, like, you know, has trouble, like, connecting. But if you actually look at the way it turns out, Kira is all the time having flings. And Dax has a very small number of times where she falls completely in love with somebody.
Kira's always doing, like, the least appropriate things, too. Mm-hmm. Like, when the original Vedic Barail is, like, having his brain replaced with half a robot brain, she's like, you should replace his whole brain with a robot brain so I can bang robot Barail.
I don't think that was her motivation. Totally, I think she wanted him to be alive. I don't think she just wanted to have sex with him.
But she's just like, I need robot Barail. It'll be totally sweet all day.
She had a romantic interest, I'll say that.
I want to date a robot.
I'm not going to phrase it as crass as Jim is phrasing it, but...
But yeah. Then later on...
it's very much because she loved Barail.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Later on, Shakar shows up, and the first thing you learn in any sort of position where you hold authority, like an authority figure, is as a psychiatrist, as someone working with someone who needs your help, like a social worker or a police officer or a doctor... if there's an established hierarchy, you don't have relationships with people that came in as an underling in that hierarchy, college professors, shit like that. Shakar was the leader of the resistance cell, met Kira when she was like 13 or something, and then was like sort of a father figure, inspirational leader dude, and then goes on to date her later on, which is totally inappropriate considering the power dynamic that would have developed in that time. So that's a fucked up relationship on Kira's part.
I actually feel like that one's okay, and I'll tell you why. Because they don't have any kind of relationship when Shakar is actually her boss. Like, you know, you notice they don't have one during the actual, like, resistance. They don't have one during the sequences when Kira and Shakar are fighting the government and Shakar is clearly in charge.
That's kind of like a good old times.
Yeah, that was like, you know, back to the good old days, and he was like kind of her mentor figure.
Well,
and like
shitty days in the mud.
And like afterwards, their relationship changed to be a romantic one. And I really hate the way Shakar is depicted after that episode, where he's like, they change the camera shots to make him look shorter, and he just, all of his dialogue is really petty, and he has this weird dick waving contest with O'Brien. Oh, that's so weird. Yeah, that, and like, well, Shakar was supposed to be in other episodes with more serious roles, but they were already too crowded, so he was cut from, like, I think four episodes.
The thing with Shakar is, like, first of all, his time in the Resistance, he banged everyone under him except for Kira.
Well, so Dukat says.
Well, I mean, his intelligence was very good, supplied by the Obsidian Order, and Dukat generally doesn't make shit up. He is a huge dick and will turn on you, but he doesn't make shit up. He uses the cutting edge of truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a very Cardassian thing to do. But on top of that, like, you know, their relationship wasn't that during the occupation and the resistance movement, but even afterwards, the long-standing relationship dynamic of subordinate pupil to teacher father figure is an inappropriate thing to make a romantic connection to afterwards, and this is very clearly stated in almost every ethical guide you'll ever find for working with people in that sort of position. And you can look up the guidelines for psychiatrists and social workers and all that stuff, and you're not supposed to do it. Like, it's just not supposed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why, but I just feel that, like, two people aren't always going to have the same relationship dynamic, and I feel like because you were someone's boss once, that doesn't mean that you can never be not their boss anymore. Especially in Kira's position, because she's gone from being, like, you know, a young rebel fighter to, like, she wasn't a colonel by then, but, you know, a major.
She was major.
Like, a very important member of the Bajoran militia, and clearly is no longer, like, dependent on him as a mentor figure. And is clearly more of an equal, I think. Even though I suppose technically he's the first minister, he doesn't act like it.
Nope.
Well, it sort of weirds me out that, like, she hung out with him when she was 13 and he was, like, father figure sort of thing, and then they were banging.
How much older is he than Kira?
I don't know. I
got the impression that he was, like, 4 years older than she was, and so he was, like, maybe 17.
I got the impression older, like, I figured mid-20s or something, just because, well, they made a big deal about how Kira was the super youngest in ever to join the Resistance and blah, 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 but they never give specific ages, so, I mean, yeah. Who knows,
how old is Kira?
Hell if I know.
I mean, she's probably in her mid-30s at this point, right?
I think she says, like, 26 years or something. I think she's in her mid-20s.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that would make sense considering if she was 13 when she joined the Resistance.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying that, like, right now, I'm going out with, I'm 24, and right now I'm going out with a girl who's 20. And, like, that's, you know, considered socially acceptable. But if this was, like, 4 years ago, when I was 20 and she was 16, that would have been bad.
You know, if she's in her mid-20s, that makes... Like, Shakar looks like he's 40-something.
He does. It's true. That's why I would possibly wonder exactly how old.
He would be, like, 30-something hanging out with a 13-year-old, and then, you know, like, half a decade after she becomes legal, he's like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've veered off course here.
So where did Robo Baral go?
Okay, so we were talking about Mirror Universe and Kira's inappropriate relationships.
Uh-huh.
So Robo Baral, she didn't actually bang him. Shakar, kind of weird, maybe legit. And then Thief Baral shows up, is super tortured. And he wants to steal the Orb of the Prophets. I don't... Like, when did they hear about the Orb of the Prophets? Was in any of the previous episodes did they talk about
the Prophets?
The Ultra
Universe doesn't have any of the orbs, right?
No, nope. They don't. And they don't know where the wormhole is either.
They don't believe in the Prophets.
Yeah, well, they have other gods. Like, they have... It's never described, but it's just... It's mentioned that Peridor has another religion that has nothing to do with the Prophets. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure where they heard about the prophets. The part about me, the part about this plan that weirds me out is that they plan to bring back an orb and use it to start a religious revolution on Bajor. But what makes them think the orb is still gonna work?
How do they know about the universe?
I just assumed that they found out the same way Smiley O'Brien did. They, like, downloaded a bunch of files at some point. I don't know. I'm not sure how they found out, but...
Maybe it's spies from the alternate universe.
Maybe so cool.
Maybe well,
that's
Kira mentioned
it. Kind of part of the reason why I think they have Defiant stuff going on.
Maybe Kira mentioned it at some point during the first crossover episode. But, maybe. Like... But I just... That whole plan weirds me out because, like, I don't... Like... Because obviously the orbs have some kind of, like... Not supernatural, but some kind of technological or mystical power. So they're
not
just
supernatural,
like,
but possibly mystical.
Yeah, I mean, they're possibly...
Yeah, I don't know.
What I'm saying is that it's sufficiently advanced technology that is indistinguishable from magic. But they clearly aren't just boxes.
Bow and arrow to phaser.
Right, they're not boxes. They got magic
glitter. They got a thing in them. But so my question is, like, that thing is clearly linked to the prophets. It's like, you know, it's like a device that the prophets control. I want to know why, if that would even still work in the alternate universe, and what their plan was if it didn't.
Well, I mean, possibly it's not a device the prophets control. Possibly it's a device that isn't linked to them and performs a function, because they all do different things. There's like the...
Do you remember which one they were trying to steal?
Prophecy.
The Orb of Prophecy?
Yeah.
Is that the one that lets you see the future?
Yeah, the one that Sisko OD'd on.
Oh, right, yeah. Huh.
Well, the Orb of Prophecy also speaks in, like, metaphor as well, from what I understood,
right,
what I saw. So
prophetic metaphor.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you still gotta interpret it.
Right, but...
how's this relevant?
Well, if we're talking about starting a religious, you know, revolution on Bajor in alternate universe,
yeah.
They just suddenly bring over this thing that's gonna spew metaphorical nonsense into your brain. I mean, it's gonna be hit or miss whether or not you can decipher it.
I mean, personally, I don't think it would have worked. Even if the orb did still function in the alternate universe, I think that, like, as we saw, in order for Sisko to get anything useful out of that orb, he had to, like, you know... As Jim said, he had to basically OD on it and nearly die. And he did get useful predictions, but that doesn't strike me as something that Mira Kira would be willing to do. And as a result, she would basically just have a box with a shiny thing inside it. At which point, she could have just fabricated one.
Well,
she didn't really need an actual orb.
On top of that, as we saw from this very episode, Thief Brile looks at the orb and has a change of heart. And he's like, oh, I shouldn't be such a huge dick, because Vedic Brile was super cool. So if she, alternate Kira, did bring the orb back, people started looking in it, they would get ideas that she wouldn't want them to have.
Exactly.
Like, it would just completely undermine everything she wanted to do.
I mean, I think that she was...
Sounds like just a worse and worse plan.
Well, I think maybe what she was hoping is that the orb would just let her see the future, and she could use that to convince people that she was a god.
No man, the Messiah.
But we know that wouldn't have worked, because, again, she would have had to basically die to do it.
Yeah.
And I know that she wasn't willing to do that.
Maybe she would have made someone else do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really clear that their plan would not have worked. All that really would have happened is that Bajor would have been down an orb, which would have been sad.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly that's something that they wanted to stop. But it just kind of highlights how inept everything in the alternate universe is.
You know what one of my favorite parts of that episode is?
What?
It's sort of a non sequitur, but Quark shows up and is a baller. Because Quark sees Barile, and he's talking to Thief Barile, and he could tell that Barile is deeply troubled and is, you know, loathes himself and blah, blah, blah. And Kira can't see this. And Kira, who's supposed to be super badass, like, knows everything, is best, oh my gosh, Kira... he totally fools her, and Quark calls him on it and lets her know. And this is like, Quark doesn't have a huge role in the show, but Quark like jumps in and makes his sense motive check and calls Brile on his bullshit.
I really like that part too, and I like that Kira wasn't able to immediately see through him, because Kira is, you know, a military officer and she fights people for a living, whereas Quark is a criminal and a bartender and, like, literally reads people for a living.
Yep.
So it totally makes sense to me, you know, RPG metaphors aside, it totally makes sense to me that Quark would be able to see through him, especially since Quark doesn't have the personal bias that Kira does.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of the episode was fine.
And they point that out, that Quark didn't even interact with Barile at all. He's like, Barile never came into my bar, but you're here so I can see what's up with you without anything from Barile.
I know what's up. I know what your issues are, pal.
Yeah.
That episode doesn't really advance the Mirror Universe any other than to show us that Mirror Kira is kind of dumb.
It's still alive despite that.
Yeah, and somehow still alive.
There's a lot of dumb people alive in the Mirror Universe.
Oh yeah, see, that was another weird thing about the last episode.
You love it so much.
I'll get to why I love it later.
Well, like, so Nog, at the end of the last episode, like, Nog runs up and, like, frees Kira. For no reason, like, basically is, like, I think expecting some kind of reward or something, and, like, you know, his listed reason is, like, I owe you because you killed my uncle and my dad, and now I own the bar. But, like, then, of course, Kira betrays him, and it's, like, why did you do that, Nog? You seem like a pretty self-serving guy. Why would you go and make this huge risk without any kind of guaranteed reward for this character that everyone knows is a traitor and, like, naturally not to be trusted?
I guess he thought, risk to reward analysis, Kira has been known to reward people as well, and he's like, okay, maybe if I free her, I'll be on my good side.
Has Kira been known to reward anybody?
She sexes people sometimes.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Maybe
I'm
that's
not sure I would want that reward for her.
Well, that's your loss. I don't know.
I feel okay with that loss.
You know?
Okay. Alright, alright, alright. So, moving on again.
No, but hang on. Nog dying in that episode adds to the theory that the final DS9 episode is just a joke on everyone who pays attention to Mirror Universe, because they kill Brunt for no reason, mm-hmm. and Ferengi dies in every Mirror Universe episode in DS9.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's I think he's right, because Quark dies in the first one in crossover. Rom dies in the second one, look through the looking glass.
In Thief Burial, no one dies, but they're not in.
Yeah, they're not in the alternate universe.
Okay.
And then Nog dies in Shattered Mirror, and then Brunt dies in The Emperor's New Clothes. I think Jim's totally right. That's a 4 for 4. Yeah. Huh. Oh man, Jim. All right. So now we're on to The Emperor's New Clothes.
Yes.
At which point, I think at this point they realize that they have been going in a really silly direction with the alternate universe. And rather than trying to make a course correction, they just decided to go with it and just make it as silly as they possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
why they incorporated the Ferengi, because Ferengi are comedy option.
Yeah, which is actually makes... Again, that's part of the reason why I don't like it, is because I feel like DS9 worked really hard to make the Ferengi into something other than just a comic relief race. And here they are just backsliding. Like, Zek thinks he's going to make money off the alternate universe somehow.
No, that's fair, though.
How? How is Zek going to make money off the alternate universe?
He could sell schematics and designs to them from the regular universe that they don't have, because there are tech disparities and differences.
Right, but he doesn't, like, he knows that everyone...
There's a huge demand by the powers that be, the Klingons or Cardassians in the alternate universe, that want, like, more tech.
We don't know how much Zek knows about the alternate universe. Like, we're not sure what sort of records are out there. All we know that he saw was Rom's schematic for the thing that takes you to the alternate universe. He never said anything about, like, a journal or notes or just any information on the alternate universe, except that it existed and he could get there.
I'm just saying, the last time that Zek did something like that was when he flew into the wormhole and he came out a nice retard. Like, the prophets, like, messed with his brain.
He wasn't retarded.
Well, they made him... they de-evolved him, which is a term that Star Trek loves. Which doesn't really mean anything, but they basically, like, they gave him brain damage, and like, completely really changed nice. His personality.
They changed his personality. I wouldn't say they gave him brain damage.
Okay.
They essentially turned him into a Buddhist.
Well, they completely changed his personality.
Which is why I take offense to the retard.
Sorry. By that, I meant that I consider it a form of brain damage, because they talk about how they regressed him to an earlier point of, in the Ferengi species evolution.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that was the last time that he tried something like this. And I just assumed he would do a little more research this time. Now, granted, there is kind of a plot line that Zek is going kind of senile. So,
I jumped ahead 2 seasons to get to that episode, so I didn't know there was a plot line about him.
I don't remember if it had actually kicked off at that point or not. But
it may be the kickoff point.
They do eventually get to a plot line where Zek starts to go kind of senile.
Yeah, I mean, he starts off earlier in the series when we first see him come to DS9. To where he's saying, oh yeah, Quark's going to be the new Grand Navis now. It was actually all a plot to get his son, right?
Yeah, he has a son, who we never see again after that episode.
Yeah, to try to get his son to realize, or to hope that his son tries to accumulate power, like, in the shadows, mm-hmm. and not, like, gravity me, like he tries to actually do in the show and whatnot. So we know that Zachary off the bat is, in fact, a smart guy and wants to progress his plans for power, not only for himself, but also for his son. Like, he's a smart guy. Then later on, as we go on through the series, Zek, in fact, becomes just more and more, like, senile and just older.
Which lines up with him, like, when he's smart early on, being like, is my son ready for this? I'm going to see if my son can take over my job, because he is feeling his age wearing off.
Uh-huh. Right. So, okay, so I'll give you that, is that Zek is kind of going a little senile. But then, like, they kind of go into more, like, Ferengi antics, where they, like, steal the cloaking device off the Rotaran.
There's just no Cleo.
It's like, really? Rotaran. How did you get to the cloaking device and steal it?
They told all the Klingons it would be dishonorable not to stare at the ceiling for half an hour. Stealing had challenged them.
Oh, goodness. This is what Jim thinks Klingons are all about.
It's dishonorable to wear shoes on the bridge.
So they did that. And then, like... They have this whole sequence where Worf shows up and is also a complete dumbass. And
he is not a dumbass. This is actually something I was waiting for this episode to talk about. In the Mirror Universe, everything's different except the Klingons. The Klingon Empire is still the Klingon Empire. They're still really mad and hit things a lot, and they fly around like taking over land and crushing people whenever they feel like it. They beat up the Terran Empire. They have these Klingon battlecruisers. They wear their angry black heavy metal gear. They punch people all the time for being insubordinate, and they're just Klingons. They're not mirror different or Klingons. They're just more Klingons.
Well, they have smaller fleets.
I would enjoy seeing actually the Klingon Federation.
Yeah, right. they have smaller fleets apparently due to budget constraints, but they're just Klingons still.
I mean, like, and it's even more apparent in Emperor's New Clothes because again, they're going to just fight the Defiant. Like that's what they're doing, and they still only brought one ship, despite the fact that the Defiant completely destroyed that ship the last time. They didn't bring more, no sir. And so, what the part that I meant about Worf being stupid is that he what he does is he tells the Ferengi...
The reasons that Garrickon doesn't kill Kira.
Well, there's that. And then he tells the Ferengi to go get him a cloaking device. And if he does, he'll let Zet go. They do that. And then he says, okay, I'm going to kill you all.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Then make my cloaking device
And then
work.
He tells them to make his cloaking device work and trust that they will do it, even though he's already betrayed them.
Well, I think Rom points that out, doesn't he? Rom makes that point, doesn't he?
I don't know.
That you're going to kill us anyway.
Rom does make that point, which lends credence to this episode being the writers telling everyone who cares about the mirror universe to stop, because they foresee this, like, objection you have, and they're going to make Rom make it, who's, you know, an idiot. And then they do it anyway, because it's the mirror universe, and shut up.
And I just...
You're going to kill us anyway, so why should I make the thing work?
I just feel like that episode is a huge waste of time, if they're going to do that. I mean, I would have preferred them to do something else. I mean, I don't know, like... If that really was their intent, they really were just trying to turn the whole alternate universe into a joke.
I kind of liked that episode because it had sexy Ezri, which was my first introduction to Ezri.
Oh, goodness.
And I approved of her. And I liked Nice Brunt was fun. The episode was sort of a fun episode for me. I wasn't insulted by them wasting my time, but I definitely didn't take it seriously.
Well, I considered, especially considering how crowded Season 7 was in general, I think that was a serious mistake.
I wasn't inside Season 7 when I saw it, so it was sort of like a non sequitur to me and like a fun adventure through Mirror Universe, as opposed to Season 7 being full of shit in the Mirror Universe for no reason.
Uh-huh.
Well, watch the rest of it. You'll see.
I'll get to it. And I mean, like, I think part of why I love Mirror Universe so much is how I've been exposed to it.
And I also, that episode is
Wasn't your first kind of... I had gotten several episodes of Star Trek, and I had actually... You were interested in, you wanted to watch In Mirror Darkly, which I had, because you had heard there was this Mirror Universe thing going on. I'm like, oh, here, check this out. And you're all sorts of in love with it.
Yeah, I fucking...
That was several years ago.
That was the first I ever saw of Enterprise, and probably, like, the first...
I introduced this guy to Enterprise through Mirror Darkly.
I was introduced to, like, Star Trek through Mirror Darkly. That was the first, like, episode of Star Trek I went out of my way to go see. I think I had maybe seen some of the movies, which were in general shit, which is probably why I didn't watch TNG for a while. But I didn't really like Star Trek that much just conceptually because I didn't see a need or a call for it. I wasn't so huge into sci-fi. And then you were like, I got this Mirror Universe shit, and it's got, like, midriffs, and everyone's a jackass.
Well, because I knew you'd probably like that more.
And I was like, that sounds interesting. This sounds, like, dark and gritty, and it's not what I associate with Star Trek, so I don't watch this. And I saw Mirror Darkly years ago. I didn't remember much of it, but I remember... Throughout thinking of Star Trek and the Mirror Universe, I always think of that, and the set designs are nice, the uniforms are really cool, like not just the midriffs, which I appreciate, but the uniforms look really nice, the characters were fun and had like backstabs and betrayal, and instead of a moral question, what Star Trek's usually about, like what's the moral ethical thing to do, how can we go about this with the least loss of life and still wake up and look at ourselves in the morning, the questions in A Mirror Darkly are like, who can I trust, whose interests are being served? When people are talking to me, are they lying to me? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? And it's a lot more intrigue and shit like that going on, which is an entirely different type of show than Star Trek usually is, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I want to make one more comment on The Emperor's New Clothes before we go fully into A Mirror Darkly. This is another reason I don't like it. It bears one of the classic signs of a TV show being made in the 90s, and that is they have lesbians, but they treat them like they're some kind of weird, like, juvenile fantasy. Like you can tell the show was made in the 90s if it has lesbians, but they, like, dance around the issue and never come right out and say it. Because by the 90s, they figured out that lesbians were good for ratings, but it was still kind of taboo to have them. So, like, you couldn't just straight up say, that woman's a lesbian, that woman prefers the company of other women. It was, they had to, like, kind of dance around the issue and be like, she's not your type. Ooh, she's not your type. And then at the very end, they, like, she's like, oh, I'm going to go off with this Lita, who's probably a prostitute in this universe. And it's like, what are they going to do that? What's happening over there? And the characters all share like a meeting.
Lita's not a prostitute.
Lita's totally a prostitute.
There's no indication she's a prostitute.
She was doing some sort of logistical thing.
No, she goes, Ezri goes over to Bashir, and, Bashir kind of gives her Lita, Lita is Ezri's payment for the job that she's done.
So he asked Ezri to debrief her.
Yeah. And they say debrief with a whole, bunch of innuendos, because that's how the 90s treated lesbians.
Well, I mean, debrief was definitely an innuendo, but I think they, I didn't get that she was a prostitute out of that. Like, I just watched it. I got that, Lita was part of the resistance, part of the Terran resistance, even though she's a Bajoran or whatever. And, Ezri and Lita are possibly together or an item, and Bashir was either you guys can go do your thing now, or Lita performed an actual role and needed to be debriefed on what just happened.
Okay, well, I don't...
And then, better minds were made.
I mean, there's really no reason... Anyway. I mean, there's no reason that Ezri would be debriefing an actual member of the Resistance, because Ezri's not a member of the Resistance. She's a freelancer.
But she was on the mission. She was, there.
Right, but you don't... there's no reason she would be debriefing someone. So clearly it was an innuendo, and the way it really looked to me like this was Bashir giving Ezri her bounty hunter payment, and I thought that was a little weird, because I was like, it's kind of strange to take your payment in prostitutes instead of money.
It wouldn't make any sense either, because she worked with Brunt, and Brunt wouldn't take prostitutes as a payment.
Well, maybe she pays Brunt out of her own account. I don't know.
And runs bounty hunter missions just for prostitutes.
But regardless of whether Lita was a prostitute or not, it still just goes to prove my point that this episode had lesbians in it, but treated them, danced around them in this really juvenile way. And, they were some kind of really, weird exotic thing that we couldn't directly talk about. It was, so forbidden. And you can tell that show was made in the 90s when it does that. Because if it's before the 90s, it just won't have lesbians. And after the 90s, we got, we matured and we're like, okay, lesbians are a thing. They exist. But during the 90s, we were really fascinated by the idea, but we were also kind of scared of it. And that's just the last nail in the coffin for me. All right, so A Mirror Darkly.
You're talking about lesbians, and I was thinking about T'Pol from A Mirror Darkly. Are we talking about that yet?
Okay, all right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks a lot. Okay, so now we are talking about A Mirror Darkly.
Yes!
All right, Jim, you really like A Mirror Darkly. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about A Mirror Darkly?
So A Mirror Darkly is awesome. It's Enterprise, which in general, not a good series. And A Mirror Darkly is really good, I think. But season 4 is kind of recognized as the better season for Enterprise anyway. So it's not surprising A Mirror Darkly comes out of season 4. A Mirror Darkly doesn't...
Snap. Bam.
Boom. A Mirror Darkly doesn't, show up with any convoluted bullshit ion storm transporter bull honky kidnapping to get someone from the main cast of Enterprise into the Mirror Universe or vice versa.
Yeah, I was really happy that it was just an episode in the Mirror Universe.
It's amazing. It shows up and there's, shit happening. I just watched the intro earlier today and I forget exactly what it is. But
here's the whole breakdown of the episode.
Well, I'm getting through why I like the beginning.
Okay.
All right. The beginning's cool, but it's immediately recognizable as darker and sort of grimmer. And then the intro music for A Mirror Darkly is really good. It's like this epic sort of rising war pounding theme drums, and it's this montage of military excursions and marching foot troll soldiers. It's way better and more inspirational than It's Been a Long Road, which is some horseshit. And it falls, the Mirror Darkly theme music falls more in line with Star Trek music. It's darker, and it's a more visceral undertones of military might than the other Star Trek things, but it's orchestral, and it's full of, it doesn't have lyrics, which are dumb. The TOS lyrics are fine, because it's just ladies warbling.
That's not lyrics.
It's vocals, though.
Right.
And
funny story, there is a version of that song with lyrics. It's really goofy.
I don't want to hear it.
There is?
Yeah, there is. I'll show it to you on YouTube afterwards.
No, please don't.
No, it's don't a thing. Ruin Gene Roddenberry series. Wrote it so that he could get a share of the composer's paycheck.
That is ridiculous. Anyways, the theme music...
Go, Gene, go.
The theme music is really good. There's no convoluted story to get the two universes intermixed. It's just a story about the Mirror Universe. And it looks good. The characters are interesting to someone who has not watched Enterprise before. I didn't feel like I needed to know who these characters' primary counterparts were.
No, you did not.
To be interested in their interactions together. They were strong enough on their own as mirror counterparts. The intro was great, and all around, I had a good time watching that episode.
All right. So, I'll just give a quick recap. For those of you who haven't seen it for a while, the premise is that the Enterprise, the NX-01 Enterprise, finds out that the Tholians have captured a ship from an alternate universe, and it's super advanced.
Named the Defiant.
Yeah, it's the Defiant, and it's from an episode of TOS where the Defiant...
Called the Tholian Web.
Yeah, called the Tholian Web, where the Defiant gets sucked through like some kind of weird extra-dimensional portal. We never found out what happened to it.
Not in TOS, yeah, we didn't.
And that's the episode...
In TOS, we didn't.
In that TOS episode is the one that I always remember because Kirk keeps fading in and out in the spacesuit where the helmet looks to be made of mesh.
Yes.
Like, that's the how best could the helmet possibly hold air? It's made of mesh. But anyway...
Force field.
But anyway, so that aside, so it was really neat to have this continuity. And it was also obviously a time portal, because it was pulling a Federation ship from the future into the alternate universe in the past.
Yep.
So that was neat, but basically the Enterprise has to go get it, although they're originally supposed to destroy it, because there's this all backstabbing stuff going on, and they're dealing with a rebellion of the other alien races at the same time. And it starts off, I really love the opening sequence where Cochran shoots a Vulcan with a shotgun.
That's how it starts.
Well, it wasn't Cochran that shot him. Well, yes, yeah, Cochran shot him. Totally, we didn't see a shot of James Cromwell, though, which I was really disappointed.
Wait, we did.
We didn't. We saw James Cromwell, who played Zefram Cochran, with shots from First Contact, where he's trying to do the Vulcan salute and whatnot. But it gets to a shot of him pulling the shotgun out of the coat, but we don't see his face.
No, I think it is. I'm pretty sure they actually get James Cromwell.
If it was James Cromwell, we would have seen his face.
No, but we see him, we don't see that...
It's just someone else dressed up the same way.
We see him run onto the ship.
No, we see him shout, and we see his face when he shouts, take the ship.
That's not him.
I'm pretty sure that's
him. There's some guy with a big soup catcher beard that's bald. That says take the ship.
Okay, well, I'll check that later.
I still love that sequence, even if it's...
I liked it, too.
I thought it actually was James Cromwell, but we'll check that later. But anyway, so this episode, even though it's good, it does raise some really weird questions. Like, first of all, how on earth, why did it take, how was the Terran Empire not way more advanced than Starfleet if they had access to, like, Federation tech, like, 100 years in the past? Like, how did they not advance past that part? Okay, question number one. Question number two.
I got an answer for that.
Oh, how?
So that put them ahead of the tech curve, so they can use that. They probably coasted on that until other species caught up, and then the arms race had to start again, because there was no necessity as the mother of invention. There's no reason for them to work super hard in inventing better tech. They probably got it more efficient or whatever, but they didn't need to make any jumps because they had the Defiant, which kicked so much ass, that we'll make more of these and we'll be fine.
Alright, so then it raises another question, is how did the Terrans of the Enterprise era possibly conquer the Vulcans? Or the Andorians, for that matter. These two races that were both extremely powerful.
They captured a Vulcan ship in 2065.
They captured a Vulcan shuttlecraft.
In 2063, anyway.
Even if they were somehow able to leverage that shuttlecraft with its mothership, because that shuttlecraft wasn't the main Vulcan ship, right. They had a ship in orbit. So even if they were somehow able to use that shuttlecraft to capture the main Vulcan ship... How could they have turned that into conquering Vulcan? Vulcan has this enormous space armada of ships that are way more powerful than anything Earth
has.
Does
it have an enormous space armada?
Yeah, it totally does. Like, at that point in Enterprise history, Vulcan has its own big military, and so do the Andorians. They both are not... Like, the Vulcans, I wouldn't characterize them as being super militaristic, but they are clearly a heavy-hitting species at that time period, and so are the Andorians. And Earth is, like, just barely building its first ship. And, like, even if they were able to, like, capture a Vulcan ship, reverse engineer all of its tech, which I find a little unlikely anyway, but even if they were somehow able to do all of that, I think they would still get their butts kicked by the Andorians or the Vulcans, let alone both at the same time.
It might have had to do with, like, space treaties.
Maybe they didn't do it at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they were...
The Enterprise taught us over the first, like, few seasons, and actually all four seasons, is that, Vulcans and Andorians don't like each other.
I mean, maybe
so if
Terrans
got into the mix and were like, yeah, Andorians will totally help you kick the butts of the Vulcans, or Vulcans will totally help you kick the shit out of the Andorians. I totally see that happening. And then once the Terrans were done with one, they move on to the next. I do the same thing in Civ 4.
But the difference is
in Medieval Total War. It's like, hey, I'll be your buddy if we go kick the other crap out of this guy. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that.
The difference is that in those games, the AI are idiots. I have a hard time believing that the actual Vulcans or Andorians would fall for that trick.
The Andorians might. The Vulcans probably not, because they shot the Vulcans with the shotgun immediately. But the Andorians might see Earth as an ally with new resources and personnel and whatever, and gumption and bootstraps to help them against the Vulcans. I mean, they see a new race that hasn't been discovered, and it's hostile towards the Vulcans. They'll be like, hey guys, you want to help us fight the Vulcans? They'll be like, oh, sure, Andorians.
I feel like the Andorians would just take Earth's resources. I mean, we saw a little bit Andorians treated humans when they first met them.
I didn't see that.
Oh, okay, you didn't. But trust me, the Andorians have nothing but contempt for humans.
Well, these are mirror Andorians.
Maybe they were nice.
Well, that's because the Vulcans and humans have been working together in Enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
And the Vulcans have come to Earth, and humans are like, yeah, hey, what's up, buddy? He's from Vulcans! Woo!
In that reality...
You know, the first thing the humans did in the Prime Universe wasn't to shoot the Vulcans.
Yeah, but I
if
mean,
they did that in the Prime Universe, the Andorians probably would have been.
But I mean,
friendly.
let's look at it this way.
Just for the race relations.
At the time when Zefram Cockrum shoots the Vulcans, unless I mean maybe Earth has its shit way more together in the alternate universe than it does in the regular universe. But even so, at that time period, it's going to be a while before Earth is going to be even remotely helpful as a you know, as an ally to the Andorians.
Maybe they have natural resources to leverage.
Maybe. I guess. That's a possibility. I just find the whole thing very unlikely, considering, like, see, I never... It wasn't until Enterprise that there was any kind of assumption that Earth was somehow lagging way behind all the other powers in terms of their tech.
Until we see the first and contact then, scenes that are take that different turn right there.
Well, like, well, in First Contact, the Vulcans had, like, some spaceships, but, like, it was, that was, like, you know, and that was kind of implied because the Vulcans have been around for a lot longer, but, like, you know, for example, the Klingons and the Romulans and, like, you know, there's always the implication that Earth developed at about the same time as they did.
Really? I always got the implication that Earth came out later than the Romulans.
Well, that's because you watched Enterprise first, but if you watched the TOS first... Some of the earlier episodes, the implication is pretty clear, and they even come right out and say that the Earth-Romulan War was conducted on equal footing, and that they were both using really crappy spaceships.
Cool.
And there was
nuclear weapons.
And there was never any indication that Earth was, like, you know, this latecomer to the game.
And to be clear, I watched A Mirror Darkly first, not Enterprise. Mm-hmm. So there's really no basis for those relations in the Mirror Universe episode.
Okay. And then there was another part, was that a big driving part of the universe of the episode is that Archer is trying to be, is alternate Archer is being shamed by the records he finds of real Archer in the Defiant's computer base.
Yeah, he is.
And so the whole thing kind of bends on you thinking that regular Archer is cool. And I'm like, no, he's not. He's not cool. I don't believe this.
See, that was a problem for me because I didn't watch regular Enterprise, except for a few choice episodes, which are really stupid. But, like, I didn't see it as, like, I need to think regular Archer is cool. I just need to believe that alternate Archer is such has such self-loathing and feels a lack of accomplishment in himself that he uses parallel or regular Archer as sort of a focal point for all this self-shame that he has inside of him already. Like, look at all this stuff that someone that is me accomplished, and I'm the same person, but I haven't done it, so I must suck. And it's more a reflection on him than what I need to think about regular Archer.
Also, they have cloaking devices,
which probably got lost.
Yeah, I guess. Someone forgot where they were hidden. And then they have that whole sequence where they fight a Gorn for like 20 minutes. That has nothing to do with the rest
of the
episode.
That's where I stopped watching that episode. I had to pack up from work. But that Gorn looked terrible. It didn't look like the TOS Gorns, which are cool, and it didn't look like the STO Gorns, which are cooler.
It was a bad special effect, and, like, it was even sillier, because the way they eventually trap it is by turning up the gravity plating that it's on so it can't move.
Sweet.
It's like, but, like, you guys knew where it was. If you had that kind of control over the gravity plating,
beam it out.
Why didn't you just turn up all the gravity plating in that section and then just vent the air?
That's a good question. What is transporter technology like right now in A Mirror Darkly?
In A Mirror Darkly, their transporter technology is really lame. And they made some excuse about how they couldn't lock onto it because the internal sensors weren't working properly. But they knew where it was, approximately. They knew it was on this deck. Could have just... Like, they made some excuse about why they couldn't beam it out. So, but they knew it was on this deck. So, if they have the ability to just turn up the gravity plating, which, first of all, would defeat any boarding party instantly...
Yep.
but if they could do that, why didn't they just turn up all the gravity plating And then I said, and then like I said, just suck the air out, and there you go. That is a dead Gorn. Because if they just, you know, if they just suck the air out, normally the Gorn could maybe escape into another section. But not if the gravity is on 500, then the Gorn would be stuck to the deck.
Yep.
Assuming they couldn't just turn up the gravity high enough to squish him. Well, I mean, that was what they did. They weren't trying to capture him. They were just trying to kill him. It wasn't like, he wasn't from the Defiant universe or anything. He was just a laborer that the Tholians brought onto the ship. Mm-hmm. Just some guy.
No, he was the master. He was the slave master.
He was a slave taskmaster, but I think he's probably still a slave, but just like chief slave.
Yeah, he was like master among slaves.
He was probably like hired and paid to work the slaves.
Maybe. I mean, that's a possibility. But it wasn't like he had any information they wanted.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was important.
He stole something, is what he did. It was some plasma relay thing that they needed.
You know what else to get their warp drive working about Amira Darkly? I like how they work with Dr. Phlox, and instead of his like lush green, all these animals that he takes care of, there's all these carcasses.
It's a torture chamber.
Yeah,
rib cages everywhere, and all this crazy stuff that he's murdered. And he helps invent the booth.
Yeah, he does. And
did he?
Yeah, the booth is in that episode, and
I remember the booth. I didn't realize that he invented it.
He and Reeds invented the booth. That's one of the interesting things with them is like, how's this booth going, Doctor? He's like, this booth is super cool. Look how much pain he's in. And they're like, oh, well, won't you stop being in pain? They're like, no, it scans the pain business and makes the pain keep going. The
pain will keep going eventually.
Super good. Also in that scene, you get to see Reed's super cool uniform. He's like this awesome SWAT gear.
Well, Reed's just the best member of the crew in general. So, like, it makes sense that he'd be the best.
Reed has a beard, too, doesn't he?
I don't remember. He has a scar.
Does he?
Okay. Maybe he usually has a beard, but it's not one in the mirror episode. But I don't
remember
he has
a beard in one episode. Maybe it's the one where archers get that, like, time virus thing.
Maybe.
I'm thinking about.
The time virus.
Time virus.
Yeah, it's really silly.
Wearing shoes on the bridge is dishonorable.
No, but you actually didn't get to the really good part of the episode.
No.
Which is the part, and this is the genuinely good part.
Just wait.
Which is the part where they go to crush the rest of the rebellion. Because there's like a rebellion going on against the Terran Empire by the non-Terran races.
Yeah.
And like there's
and the non-Terran races are winning.
Yeah,
when they
the non-Terran races are winning. And it's like this big, and like there's this big like, you know, like coup set up where T'Pol allies with the other non-human members of the crew, and with Ambassador Sabaal, who I really like, and I was sad that he wasn't in more episodes.
Speaking of T'Pol, I just want to make a cutaway. T'Pol wears the midriff the best out of anybody in any of the mirror universes.
I guess that's true.
He's working that. It's amazing.
But so they have this really cool scheme of like disabling the Defiant and then blowing it up, which then doesn't work, and they fail and they get destroyed, and it's actually really upsetting and sad when they fail, because it's like you were really rooting for them.
I would not be rooting for them.
I was rooting for them because they had gumption.
I appreciate the gumption, but I liked the Terran Empire more than gumption.
And like, you know, and so, but like, you would be happy with the ending anyway. Ooh. I feel like anyone can enjoy this. And then it takes kind of a weird left turn where Archer, like, you know, naturally decides that since he has the most powerful ship in the universe, he's going to go and become emperor.
I'm just going to be in charge of things now.
The emperor of Terran Empire.
Well, now. We'll just wait.
Because then, at the last second, he gets assassinated and replaced by Hoshi!
Who is the captain's woman?
The captain's woman, which is from the original TOS Mirror Mirror. Is another,
Who has the crew behind her.
And, like...
And also rocks the midriff.
And then she takes over and becomes Empress Sato. And overall, I thought the second half was pretty solid. The first half,
except for the Gorn fight, I like the first half a lot.
Is the Gorn fight in the first half?
It's in the second half.
In the second half. Okay, I guess it is. Okay, so the ending is pretty solid. I really like the ending.
I'm looking forward to watching the ending later.
Yeah. So I think that overall, that's actually one of the better alternate universe episodes.
Which is why I love the alternate universe so much, because that's the first one I saw.
So I think that's all the episodes of...
Yeah, that is all the episodes. And I had a little bit more, but we're already running like an hour 40 minutes. So I think...
Whatever.
Okay, do we want to keep going?
Yeah, we do, because I wanted to get to Star Trek Online, which also has the Mirror Universe.
All right, please, go ahead.
All right, so Star Trek Online takes place 2409, right? So this is 30 years after Nemesis, right?
Right.
The last chronological episode of the alternate universe we have is in DS9 Season 7, Emperor's New Cloak, right?
Yeah.
And that's when they've got the Defiant all working and everything, right? All right, so in 30 years, we have the Terran Empire back in business.
Yeah. Shit, yeah.
Has retaken a whole bunch of their territory. It is a powerful force that's just stomped the shit out of the Cardassians and Klingons.
And their five entire ships.
Well, a lot more than that, Star Trek Online, but that's probably more of the virtue of it being an MMO. There's lots of enemies to fight, but it is now invading our universe in Star Trek Online.
Holy shit, no way.
Now, they have all the same, same exact ships we do in the Prime universe in Star Trek Online. All those ships are coming over. What's the difference, though? Their nacelles are purple instead of blue.
Yes! Holy shit! Oh, I need to play STO again. Goddamn.
And you get to all this storyline when you start doing the Cardassian sector missions.
They should make...
So Beta Ursa, Zeta Andromeda, Alpha Trianguli, which are the sectors of space in Star Trek Online.
You just said some words.
I did say some words. I know they're a little over your head because you're not as cool as I am with Star Trek Online.
That's a fact.
As in, you're not even playing it.
Be a playable faction.
See, this is what I talk about with Star Trek Online, bringing up, like, obscure points of Star Trek canon in, like, really weird ways. Because, like, you know, as we've already established, it's not like the Terran Empire runs the entire universe.
Well, I want to let this in because I know the way our show is organized right now is that we're actually going to be moving into, like, the non-canon stuff, like the books and whatnot. And Star Trek Online, I feel, does fall into that category.
It does. Do we want to keep going into the books? Okay.
Heck yeah.
I have bunch of books at my bookstore if you guys want to come patronize it.
Any of them have to do with Mirror Universe Star Trek?
I haven't read them all.
Alright, well, there are a number of
there
are a number of novels and stuff that deal with the alternate universe, some of which are written by William Shatner and are part of what's called the Shatnerverse.
Yes.
Which is William Shatner's own special version of canon. And it's funny because William Shatner's theory of the alternate universe is that it was all caused by First Contact. Which is funnier because, like, you know, he's assuming the idea is that in his mind, First Contact, humans met the Borg and then went into space thinking everyone was evil, which doesn't fit at all with what we saw in First Contact, especially because
I remember there was a conversation that alternate universe Spock was, like, because I've read these books, alternate universe Spock was having a conversation with somebody, I don't remember who it was. And they're trying to trace back where history diverged for the alternate universe and the Prime universe. And they trace it all back to the naming of some lake on Earth called, like, Lake Sloane. It was called something else instead.
Huh.
It was, like, the beginning point of all this for whatever reason.
Huh.
It was really obscure. And I read more of the book. It was never brought up again.
I haven't read the book. This is just going off of the Wikipedia entry for these novels. Is that according to the Wikipedia entry... Shatner's explanation for the alternate universe is that it was caused by First Contact, which is silly for a number of
reasons. It is silly, especially when that's not actually what occurs in his books.
Yeah, so maybe that was just someone...
Stupid Wikipedia.
I mean, this is Wikipedia we're talking about. Someone could very easily just have made a mistake.
This is true. It is
a big mistake.
Like,
but also, supposedly, like, these books are also about how Emperor Kirk is still alive, or he's calling himself Emperor Tiberius, and Picard
weird ponytail thing going
Picard
on,
Picard is, like, his right-hand man, and he's fighting Spock. Because apparently all these guys lived through the end of the Terran Empire, which strikes me as a little weird.
Uh-huh.
I would have figured at least some of them would have died.
I think they would have gotten rid of Picard.
Mm-hmm. Say what now?
You think the people fighting the Terran Empire would have killed Picard, like, first thing.
Well, yeah. Although
I really wish we had spent some time in Picard's era of alternate universe.
Yeah, see, I think that would have been really cool. We would have actually seen the fall of the Terran Empire. That would have been interesting. Because I imagine that was
happening. Because I would have thought that the fall of the Terran Empire would have been sometime around, like, the turn of the 24th century. The end of the 23rd century there into the 24th, so I think it would have happened.
I always imagined it would have happened sometime during, like, early TNG.
Picard could be a remnant after the Empire's already fallen.
Well, plus, like, the Empire probably didn't fall all at once.
I mean,
it was probably more like...
Because the impression I get when I read the Shatnerverse books, anyway, was very much that this is a thing that had been going on for a while, where there was no Terran Empire, you know, and all humans are just, like, oppressed, you know, mm-hmm. It sucks to be human. It's been a long time to be a human. It's sucked a long time to be a human. You know, not like just a generation, but like several generations.
But I mean, we would have had an excuse to see like the Enterprise bridge all like yesterday's Enterprise style again. Because it would have been all militaristic. Which is fine, except for the fact that they had all the lights dimmed. That always bothers me, is that it's fight time, turn off all the lights.
Fight time.
That's so the people boarding your ship can't see you.
Yep, okay.
No, eyes
there was, and there was also a couple of, we were talking about Star Trek Online recently, there was also Shattered Universe, I think is the name of it, which is...
I never played it, but it's, really, like it's like a fighter.
Yeah, it's a really
sim, right?
Crappy flight sim on the PS2.
I remember we talked about it a little bit when we were doing our Star Trek games.
Yeah, I mean, it takes
series.
Place, you basically, you're on the Excelsior, and you get teleported into the alternate universe, but much like... It's not like your Excelsior doesn't get teleported in. You switch places with everyone on alternate Excelsior. And so you have all these fighters. Because in the alternate universe, everyone uses fighters. And, like, you can do things like, the way you defeat Starfleet ships is you just sit between their nacelles, because they don't have any guns there, and you just shoot them.
This is why Peregrine sweeps Cardassians
in. You know, incidentally, exactly what happens in Bridge Commander.
Not stock Bridge Commander, mind you. What was the name of the mod that your brother had downloaded, and that's what he was playing?
Full Speed or something, or like Warp 10 or something? I forget what it was called.
Warp Factor New.
Yeah. But, like, you know, I mean, it's not a very good game. Like, the flight control the flight controls are really clumsy.
It was a PS2 game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a PS2 game. And it's
you
really...
guys should do an episode where we make Oren play that game for an
hour. No, not doing that. Yeah, I have better things to do with my time.
No, you don't.
All right, so that's the alternate universe. Oh, and also Elite Force featured some brief encounters with the Mirror Universe.
I gotta say, of all the Mirror Universe implementations I've seen through the books, the games, and the series, mm-hmm. Elite Force had probably one of the most obscure ones ever.
Yeah, I mean, you had to be looking really closely to tell.
Yeah, it was, you were playing, you play as Alexander Monroe, and you're trucking around, and there's, you're stuck in this part of space where Voyager's disabled, there's some, like, big dampening field, but anyway, there's this, like, pirate raider base that's, like, this amalgamation of, like, this old Federation Constitution-class starship, a Klingon Bird of Prey, I think, like, one or two others we don't immediately recognize, and, the Constitution-class is actually from the alternate universe.
Yeah, you can
and it's just there just cause.
It's got like, the symbol on it. And they never actually identify it as one, do they? I think
they never outright say, yeah, this is from the Mirror Universe, guys, even though it's kind of, like, obvious that this isn't really truly a, you know, from our universe at all.
That sounds like a fun Easter egg. I like that.
I mean, I'm sure it was just kind of like a fan service thing is what it was, but that's kind of really all it was, though. It was just, like, it was a really kind of in-your-face sort of Easter egg, though. Do you want to term it as an Easter egg? Because I mean,
I think it's weird that it was there, but no one from Voyager commented on it. I would think people from Voyager would be kind of fascinated by it. And at least kind of curious, because it would imply that wherever they are has the ability to reach across universes as opposed to just pull ships out of space.
And possibly through time, too, because the crew that were there for that part of the station were still dressed up as Mirror Universe crewmen, is what they were. Mm-hmm. They had the sash going on, everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was like, I wonder if they got pulled through time as well, or if it was just, you know, maybe... the clothes were just handed down from generation to generation.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they would have been there for like 130 years or something.
They do that in A Mirror Darkly when Archer and the crew board the Defiant. They take the uniforms from the TOS.
Well, they do because they don't have anything else to wear besides
the
EVA suits.
But like the time-swapping uniforms, that reminds me that it's funny to see them do that because when you look at the Enterprise's bridge, there's a couple scenes where it cuts between the Enterprise's bridge and the Defiance Bridge, and one of them is clearly more modern and technical and has way better computers and whatever. And then you can look at the Defiance Bridge, and it's all, like, stupid gray, and everything's really dumb knobs and dials, and it's really funny to see.
Well, one of them is what the 60s thought a spaceship would look like, and the other one is what the, you know, the 2000-aughts thought a spaceship would look like.
But then T'Pol has the uniform from the TOS series, and she looks pretty much just as good as that in that as she does as the Midriff Brigade. This is good.
Yeah. So, all right. So, I think are we done? Is there anything else to talk about with the Mirror Universe?
Are you done, Jim?
I feel like we have fully explored this topic, and I'm going to go ahead and say that this was all part of the plan because we aren't making an episode next week for Christmas, so we can get an extra long one.
There you
this
go.
Week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Merry Christmas.
You know who I'd like to give an extra long one to.
Oh dear. All right. So, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
I was waiting to see where the innuendo was going to come from, Jim.
You know, season's greetings.
I was waiting for that.
Have a good next weekend, and this is All Things Trek signing off.
Happy Picard Day.